Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me as usual is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hello, Jason.
How are you doing, sir?
Doing well, doing well. Got NBA Finals on the horizon here. We made it.
We did. Finally, we made it. Wow, it got a little hairy for Miami, but they managed to not blow a 3-0 lead, made it into the finals. Some history made there. But yeah, another team who has made history, the Denver Nuggets. For the first time, they are in the NBA Finals. Pretty amazing accomplishment for this team. They were, in many ways, you know, they were certainly the best in the West for basically the entire season and looked like they were going to dominate, but they kind of slipped a little bit for a couple months. It was looking a little bit hairy, but in these playoffs, they have looked quite dominant. Of course, having the two-time NBA MVP, Nikola Jokic, some great role players as well. Coach Michael, don't call him Mike Malone.
No, please.
Do not. Yo, he doesn't like that. So, yeah, Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr., Aaron Gordon, they got quite the team, and we'll see if they can win a championship, but they've made it to the NBA Finals for the first time.
They have, and I believe the final ABA team to make the NBA Finals, if my math is correct on all those. Yeah, it makes sense. It feels so long ago that the Pacers made it. I always forget, you know, everybody, like, I know that they made it, but I always forget about the 2000s Pistons, because it's like, they came, but, I mean, they didn't really make the NBA Finals. They were there, they played the Lakers, but, you know,
yeah.
It was like, they gave a pretty good run, actually. They did
better than others, yeah.
Yes.
They took it 6, I believe. You know, they did a little better
than
others.
They were all bald, though. Yeah. Wasn't that the bald year? That was weird. I think I just tried to forget that. Were all bald, or was that another year that they all got bald?
I thought 98 was all bald.
Maybe you're right. Okay, so yeah. I'm mixing that. I'm being unfair to the 2000 Indiana Pacers. I apologize. But
how dare you?
But But for the Nuggets, I mean, it felt like it was a long time coming, because I know potentially, you know, we have a little bit of an age difference between you and me, but when I really started following the NBA, the Nuggets were like the laughingstock of the NBA, and pretty much were right for like 10 more years after that. Like, I really started getting into the NBA about 94, 95-ish, and they were okay at that time. You know, they were still pretty good. Yeah, the Dikembe Mutombo stuff, we'll talk about that. But it happened very quickly that they got bad. And by like 1996, 97, they're like, all right, this team's pretty bad. And then they'd be pretty bad for a long time until Carmelo came, and that's it. It just felt like they were so bad for so long and had so much turmoil that it never quite felt like this moment was ever going to come, that this moment where they were going to make the NBA Finals and be favored, like the betting favorites going in to the NBA Finals. Like, the betting favorites are the Denver Nuggets, which, just, you know, telling 1998 me that the Denver Nuggets are going to go to the NBA Finals and be the favorite, I just wouldn't believe it. But it's been quite the ride for them, and we're going to get into that here. We're going to give you a little bit of the history of the Denver Nuggets, because it's a little bit more fascinating than you might think it is on its face. You're like, hey, the Denver Nuggets. But it's been a lot of ups and a lot of downs, futility, innovations, experiments, lost superstars, and now finally they made it to the NBA Finals. Will they win a championship? We don't know. But as of this recording, they're making it to the Finals. That's what we do know.
Right. That is what we do now. Yeah, and, you know, interestingly enough, like outside of that period that you're talking about, which was a fairly extensive period of, you know, 7-8 years where they were, you know, mostly a terrible franchise, they've usually been good. Not right. Now, rarely great, never really great, but they've usually been good. And they've obviously had a very good run over the last few years with Jokic, and this is the furthest that they've got. But they had made 2 conference semis before then. You know, they had a pretty good run with George Karl as coach. You know, and they, well, obviously we'll get to the ups and downs. You know, they've had memorable guys, the Doug Moe years. You know, and most of those that time they were, you know, at least good, sometimes very good, but as we say, at least in the NBA, falling short of the finals. But yeah, let's dig into it. We're going to start by going way back. How far back are you going
to
go, Rich? Yeah.
We're going to go way back. We're going to go to 1932. And you're thinking, what are you guys? The NBA wasn't around. What are you guys talking about? Well, there was a professional basketball team in Denver before the Denver Nuggets. They were the Denver Nuggets. Yes.
The Denver Nuggets.
And yes. In 1932, as an AAU team led by player coach Jack McCracken.
McCracken.
Jason, McCracken. What's your favorite Jack McCracken story? Just one. Please just pick one for the purposes of brevity.
My favorite Jack McCracken story. Yeah, unfortunately, it's not something I can tell in the air.
I knew it. Old Jack at it again.
Yeah.
Old McCracken. Yes. Yeah.
Old McCracken.
Old man always. McCracken.
Yeah. You don't want to know issues. How I got that name. Yeah.
Right. Jack McCracken's Denver Nuggets, they were an AAU powerhouse. They won the AAU titles in 1937, 1939, and 1942. And at the time, you know, amateur teams often associated with, you know, factories, workplaces, sometimes just communities or whatever, were offered more money than the pro teams. And there are examples of NBA, early NBA players, you know, leaving their team to go play in an AAU team. You know, maybe you work at this company, you're going to get paid for the working for the company. And then, hey, after after your workday, you play for the basketball team and you make a little extra money that way. Somehow, in a lot of ways, that was doing better than a lot of the pro teams, which, you know, nowadays seems absolutely unfathomable. But yeah, it was absolutely the case. And, you know, that Denver AAU team, unfortunately, wasn't always the Denver Nuggets. They started as the Denver Nuggets, but they changed a little bit. They were one time known as the Safeway Pigs, as well as the Ambrose Jellymakers. Jellymakers. Yeah. What do you think the Ambrose company did? Do you think they made jelly? I assume that would be the case, right?
I hope so. I mean, otherwise I'm very, you know, I'm a little scared about what happened there. But yes, I do believe the Ambrose Jellymakers. I'm going to go ahead and on a limb here. Guess they had jelly. Maybe McCracken was somehow involved. Maybe it was the McCracken technique of how they made their jelly.
Right. No jam or marmalade or anything. Just straight jelly,
just,
I believe.
Just straight jelly. Yeah. Yeah, you're not gonna mess with, you know, the Ambrose method, obviously.
Right. You want to go get jam, go somewhere else. But Ambrose is giving you jelly.
Go somewhere else. Yeah, absolutely. Right.
So after the 1948 season, the Nuggets, or the Denver AAU team, decided to legitimize themselves, join the pro ranks, and they linked up with the National Basketball League in 1949. Did not go great. They finished 18-44, dead last in the Western Division. But as is going to happen a couple times with the the Denver professional teams, they were part of a merger that led to the, of course, newly formed NBA. The Nuggets, then led by player coach Jimmy Darden, jump shot innovator Kenny Sailors. We've talked about him several times on this show. Sure. The team also featured Dillard Crocker, who I know for a fact we've talked about before.
Yeah.
As well as the discussion that there's just not enough Dillards in today's NBA, if you ask me. I mean, that's just, there's Damian Lillard's, which I guess if you combine Damian Lillard's name, you would get Dillard. Maybe we should just call Damian Lillard Dillard, and then we will have Dillard's in today's game. But
we got a Dillard, yeah.
We'll have to run that by him and see if he's cool his nickname being Dillard.
Yeah, let's not dilly-dally about that.
I can't imagine he would be against it, but just in case he is, you know, tell him. Well, you're named after 1950s Denver Nugget leader Dillard Crocker. So
I'm sure he's going to go for that, yeah.
Yeah, Bob Brown was on that team. Dwayne Kluth was on that team as well.
Yeah.
If you're wondering, man, who the hell are these guys? None of these men really had particularly long careers, which is probably why the team went 11-51 in their one and only NBA season. So yeah, they started 0-15. They got their first win, 68-61, over the Baltimore Bullets. Another name that was reused by a second franchise as well, because it's not the same Baltimore Bullets that you're thinking of.
Right.
As far as that starting 0-15, the 2016 Philadelphia 76ers and the 2010 New Jersey Nets shared the NBA record for the longest losing streak within the same season at 18 straight games. So not quite there, but pretty nice futility there at 0-15. They featured 10 rookies, three players in their sophomore year, one player, Jack Toume, with 2 years of experience, and then Kenny Sailors, who was in his third NBA season there. So that's kind of it for that team. As I said, they're one and done. And this current Nuggets iteration does not share any lineage or any records or anything with the team that, you know, of this era here. So it's a completely different team than today's Denver Nuggets. And real quickly, Denver did have another pro team for the 1951 season when the Denver Refiners, which is a hell of a name. I love that name.
Yeah, Refiner, yeah.
They played in the National Professional Basketball League, the NPBL, which was made up of franchises that were kicked out of the NBA for one reason or another for being bad or not having money.
Basically, they were too small markets, basically.
Yeah,
They shut out all the smaller markets, plus Denver, which was pretty far west, so travel was hard.
Right. Your Sheboygan Blackhawks and ilk, you know, kind of got kicked out to the NBA, NPBL.
Yeah, the Waterloo. Yeah, absolutely not.
Yep. But that team, they finished okay. They were 18-22. But not in Denver. They did not finish the season in Denver. No, instead, the team moved to Evansville and became the Evansville Agogans.
The Agogans, yes. My favorite.
Evansville Agogans for the last six games of the season. Can you imagine Agogan fever in Evansville as they're like, hey, you get this team for six games, so come watch them. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, cool, you know. So I don't know. I don't know if McCracken had anything to do with that, but no. I bet he did.
Right. It's fun to say. Yeah, they were agog for the Agogans, of course. So
who isn't?
I'm agog for the Agogans.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's exciting. Yeah. So the Nuggets, after the Nuggets and the Refiners folded, Colorado did not have any major league sports teams until the Denver Broncos began play in 1960.
Yep. So almost a decade without any major league team, which is, you know, wild now, given that, you know, they have everything.
Right.
But
yeah,
even then, it wasn't like, you know. It's still kind of modern history that they have baseball and hockey there too, because the Rockies come in 1993. Yeah. The Nordiques moved to, I want to say, 95, maybe somewhere in that. I'm not a hockey. This isn't a hockey podcast.
It's not a hockey podcast.
But
no.
It's somewhere around there. It's not. So it is actually pretty relatively recent that they've had all those teams. But the Nuggets, though, the Nuggets did come back. Yes, they did.
They did come back. Yeah, I'm not going to look that up because this is not a hockey podcast. I'm not going to look up that fact. People can do it by themselves. But
yeah, we don't have any Quebec Nordique knowledge. I don't have that much Quebec Nordique knowledge in my brain, unfortunately. Sorry.
Right. Yeah. These Denver Nuggets began, interestingly, in Kansas City. Well, sort of. So 1967, the ABA is about to start getting on, and one of the new exclusive American Basketball Association franchises is awarded to a group in Kansas City led by Southern California businessman James Trindle. Trindle was a partner in a large Southern California engineering firm. He put up $35,000 to be part of the investor and ownership group. Cost a little bit more. I know there's been inflation, but I'm going to go ahead and guess that $35,000 is probably not like, you know, $1 billion today.
I know it's not that much. Yeah. We got some pretty bad inflation going right now, but I can't imagine. Let's see, what was it, 1967 to today's dollars?
Yeah,
that'd be $322,000 in today's money, which is still if you walked into, you know, any place and said, I have $300,000, I'd like to buy an NBA team. I think Ashiba bought the Suns for a little more than $300,000. So
that might get you like a half a percent of that.
Maybe a half a point.
Yeah.
You know,
there you go. Yeah.
But I mean, you could buy season tickets for that if you like, but you could sit close to the team, but I don't think you're owning the team for out there.
Probably not.
$300,000.
They had one problem. They could not find a good arena in Kansas City. Left scrambling, the ABA commissioner George Bikin says, "Like, hey, why don't we try Denver out?" And it worked very well. Their general manager was former NBA player and original Nugget Vince Borla, who was a Denver resident at the time. He was named GM, and then Trindle and his group decided to make it official. The team was now in Denver. However, thankfully, the Cincinnati Royals, they would later find the Municipal Auditorium in Kansas City hospitable for a couple of years before Kemper Arena was built, although they would spend their weekends in Omaha, presumably with their dad who lived in Omaha. Their mom was in Kansas City, you know, Kansas City, Omaha Kings, you know.
Yes, yeah, of course.
Right, yeah, of course you got to, you know, split time between parents. You can't just live one place or another. At least not at least for 3 years. They were, you know, eventually they reconciled in Kansas City. Everything was happy, but, you know. Anyway, yes. So they were like, hey, we're going to call them the Denver Larks. How do you feel about Denver Larks?
The Denver Larks, you know, initially I was like, that's kind of bad, but the Denver Larks isn't too bad. You know, that's okay. You know, you could have like some weird puns like, I'm a lark. I'm going to go to Denver and watch the Larks or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
yeah, right.
And pretty cool bird. I mean, it's not a very menacing bird. It's like a very small bird, but they're cute, I guess. You know? So I don't know if that's exactly what you're going for is like a professional basketball team is like cute little bird with a little, you know, little yellow on its face. But I don't know. I like birds. I like the Larks. So.
Sure. Not bad. Yeah. I'm okay. I mean, I like Nuggets better, but I think Larks, you know, is a decent name. Unfortunately, you're probably not going to get any opportunities for any other Larks, you know, being the Colorado State bird and all. But nevertheless, I mean, whenever an NBA expansion team happens, we're going to have to pitch a Goggins as their name.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So the Vancouver Goggins, I don't know.
Sure.
Louisville Goggins, we'll figure
Las
out.
Las Vegas Goggins.
That actually would be really good. Yeah. All right. Of course, you know, commonly in the early days of the ABA, the people who tried to get franchised, turned out they didn't really have enough money to run a pro basketball team.
Turns out they said they had money, and then they would say, okay, now you can pay us. And they went, okay, one problem.
Well,
let me just go to my car. I have my checkbook in my... it's a Simpsons thing. He drives away, you know.
I don't have $35,000. So they were... So Commissioner Mikan... forced the team to post a $100,000 performance bond, or the franchise would be taken from them. Eventually, the team was sold to Bill Ringsby, who owned a Denver trucking business. And they decided to rename the team the Denver Rockets based off of his company's trucks. The NBA also had their own Rockets based in San Diego, who debuted the same season, but no one really cared at the time. So now we have the Denver Rockets. Tell me a little bit about go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was always surprised that there was a team called Denver called the Rockets. And I think it was only in doing research for this that I realized why they were called the Rockets is based off, you know, Ringsby's trucking business. Cause it was always, it never made any sense to me. I'm like, Houston Rockets always made sense. And they were somehow the last Rockets in basketball. And the Denver one, I was like, I've been to Denver. I don't know what the hell they're talking about with the Rockets part, but it's all cause of Bill Ringsby and his Rockets trucks, you know, get your stuff quick with Ringsby's Rocket trucks. But there you go. The Denver Rockets. So, they're in the ABA, and it speaks to what you said at the top of the show where, you know, despite like very, very notable futility, you know, throughout the 90s and the early 2000s, the Rockets and the Nuggets in general were really damn good. And they were solid as hell in the early days of the ABA as well. They went 43-33 in their inaugural season. They made it all the way to the Western Division semifinals. Their second year, they went 44-34, again lost in the Western semis. That's going to be a theme for the Nuggets, unfortunately, for a lot of time. Yeah. Then in 1970, their fortunes completely changed when they acquire the at the time controversial star Spencer Haywood to their team. So if you don't know about this, the story of Spencer Haywood, one of the first players ever to turn pro before graduating from college. He had a standout year at the University of Detroit. He decided to turn pro. The NBA had a rule in place that obviously prohibited players from joining the league until 4 years after their high school class had graduated. The NBA had a similar rule as well. But league executive Mike Storin decided, well, hold on a minute. It's like, that rule's kind of dumb, right? If we can get Spencer Haywood, we should probably try to do it, shouldn't we? So they said, well, what can we do here? And they dreamed up a hardship exemption that would allow certain players to break that rule. Haywood, it was said that his family was quite poor. His mother was raising 10 children. She had a meager income. And the ABA said, you know what? Sure, pal, come into our league. And the Rockets selected him in the ABA draft. And it was on, and he was incredible. That's why they decided to have the hardship exemption and say that this rule is kind of dumb, because he comes in, he leads the ABA with 30 points per game, 19.5 rebounds per game. He accumulates 17.1 win shares in his rookie season. In one season, 17.1 win shares as a rookie, winning basically every single individual award you could possibly win. ABA MVP, Rookie of the Year, All-Star Game MVP, All-ABA. everything you could possibly say. He helps the Rockets go to the Western Division Finals, but unfortunately they fall to the Los Angeles Stars. A thing that, again, that would become all too frequent in the 80s for the then Denver Nuggets as well. And unfortunately for Haywood, he's done one and done in the NBA too, because the NBA and the Seattle Supersonics decide, I'm sure completely unrelated to Haywood being as really good as he was, said that, you know, that rule that they have to be 4 years, we don't like that rule. We're just going to say it doesn't exist, and we're just going to go with it, which, hey, good on them. That's a dumb rule. They should do it. So the Seattle Supersonics say, we're just going to get Spencer Haywood. And then it kind of happens. I mean, obviously, many protests are launched. Lawsuits were had. People saying, well, you can't just do this. Right. And the Sonics were like, well, we're just going to do it. Yeah. And then they did. And then it just kind of happened. So Haywood goes to the NBA, plays for the Seattle Supersonics. And unfortunately, the Rockets have a huge fall off, losing a big-time star like Spencer Haywood. They go to 30-54 in the 1971 season, and then 34-50 in the 1972 season. 1973, they do get back on track a little bit thanks to the efforts of ABA standout Warren Jabali. They win 47 games. Still, they cannot make it deep into the playoffs. They again lose in the semifinals. And then, man, the team's fortunes just wouldn't change on the quarter off until 1975, when it was time for a transformation, introducing the Denver Nuggets again.
The Nuggets are back, baby. Yes. So in the heading into the 75 season, so Bill Rungsby had already sold the Rockets to San Diego businessmen, Frank Goldberg and Bud Fisher. I wonder if they thought they were actually buying the San Diego Rockets instead of the Houston Rockets. Or instead of the Denver Rockets. That would be a funny.
Right, you know, that would be good. Like, we bought the Rockets. The Denver ones. They're like, no.
Yeah. So, you know, at this point, you know, there had been merger talks on and off. Certainly it seemed like the ABA's future wasn't going to be there too long, and the idea of a merger was going on. So it's like, hey, why don't we just change the name right now? Because there's another Rockets. It's a little confusing. So it worked it out. So they settled on the Nuggets in homage to the original Nuggets. So as we said, they changed things around. They got a new head coach, Larry Brown, former ABA player, and of course, you know, coaching a lot of teams in the future and leaving a lot of places to go to other places. Drafted Bobby Jones. They got 5-time All-Star Matt Calvin. Completely overhauled their roster, basically only Ralph Simpson and Byron Beck remaining. Beck being one of the players from the original Denver Rockets from the expansion season. He'd been there basically the whole time for the franchise, and they had their best year to date. They won 65 regular season games. They went 40-2 at home. But unfortunately for them, once again, they failed to get past the Western Division Finals. They were upset by George McGinnis and the Pacers. It was kind of like the last gasp of that Pacers dynasty. 1976, they, you know, obviously they had a great regular season, but they changed things around. They end up drafting David Thompson and Marvin Webster, who were number one and number three overall in the NBA. They end up convincing both of them to join the ABA. They obtain Kentucky Colonel star Dan Issel, who they had just helped the Colonels win championship, but the Colonels apparently couldn't afford him. They did have a small drop-off in their overall win total, but still won 60 games. They made the ABA Finals finally, but meeting them, New York Nets and Julius Erving, and despite their brilliance, they could not get they could not get past Julius Erving. They would lose in the ABA Finals, and their last appearance in a championship series until, of course, this one coming up here. And then, hey, it's, you know, they do have a great look, they have a great future, but then the ABA NBA merger takes place after the 76 season. The Nuggets, the Knicks, and the Pacers are merged into the NBA. So now Denver Nuggets are in the NBA.
Yep, they're in the NBA. Spirits of St. Louis, Kentucky Colonels sent out to the outside again. Nuggets, yep. Nets, Pacers, Spurs brought in. Yep. And then the Nuggets are in the NBA, and they've kept, obviously, they have the core of Thompson and Issel and Jones, and they continue their solid play even in the new league. Come over to the new league, they still win 50 games in their inaugural NBA season, which, again, you know, speaks to, and we've done shows about that too, where, you know, everybody thinks of the ABA as like this, you know, secondary league or whatever. I mean, a bunch of the teams, you know, they came over and were perfectly fine. It wasn't like they got destroyed or were. I mean, the Nuggets won 50 games in their inaugural NBA season with the same team, basically, that they had in the ABA. So they make it all the way to the conference finals. They make the NBA playoffs for the next three seasons, getting as far as the Western Conference Finals. Again, in 1978, but never felt like a real threat to contend or win a championship, unfortunately. A big swing before the 1970 season as well. They trade Bobby Jones for George McGinnis, but that failed to bear fruit as McGinnis was starting to kind of begin his downslope of his career. And then this is going to shock you, Jason, so hopefully you're sitting down.
All right, I'm sitting down.
Okay. Yep, okay. In the middle of the 1979 season, again, you're not – please tell me you're sitting down. Larry Brown left for another coaching job in the midst of a season, said,
okay. Wow.
I am leaving for another job. This time he went to UCLA.
Okay.
Replaced him was his good friend Donnie Walsh, future NBA executive, who took over for the team after that. The team also at this time was struggling financially, especially with the $2 million entry fee that they needed to join the NBA. Eventually, Red McCombs, a prolific businessman of the era, bought the team in 1978, and the team struggled in the following seasons, you know, just barely getting by, winning 30 and 37 games respectively, missing the playoffs in back-to-back seasons. Really the first time in franchise history the team had missed the playoffs. You also have Thompson obviously having his issues with drugs, and you know, Dan Issel's is still fine, but you know, a lot of the other team around him is just not that good anymore, and things are just not really looking great in Denver. But thankfully there's a hero to come, and his name is Doug Moe. Yes, Doug Moe.
We don't always get the hero we want, but we get the hero we deserve. And Denver deserved Doug Moe.
Doug Moe, yep.
Absolutely. Yes. So steps in midway through the 1981 season, helps guide them to respectability. They were 11-20 when he joined. He was 26-25 under. Said they missed the playoffs that year, but that would be the last time until 1990 that they would miss the playoffs. The next season, they would play fast, crazy fast, high-powered, high-speed motion offense with the likes of Alex English coming in, Kiki Vandeweghe coming in. They got the guy, only guy who wouldn't shoot on their team, T.R. Dunn, there. Plus, you got Dan Issel. And you got a lot of guys who are going to shoot, and they're going to score, and we're going to move. And starting in 82, they would lead the league in pace and points per game in five of the next 10 seasons. Never finished worse than three in either of those metrics. They also had one of the best offensive ratings throughout the decade. In 1982, they scored at least 100 points every single game, set the league scoring record for highest points per game average at 126.5 points. They did not emphasize defense at any point, but it really didn't matter. They were fun, and they were really good throughout that decade. They had winning records in basically every season. They made the playoffs every season after that. They made the Western Conference Finals in 85. You know, now they weren't exactly great, but they were very, very good. And as you said, a lot of fun. You know, they had a really well-balanced team with English and Vandeweghe at the forward spots. You got Dan Issel holding things up for half a decade in the middle. And, of course, their most famous game would be December 13th, 1983, the all-time record-breaking game, the Nuggets hosting the Detroit Pistons, triple overtime ending with a 186-184 score, 370 total points, still an NBA record. And as we mentioned, did make it to the Western Conference Finals 85, but fell to the Lakers in five games. You know, obviously the Lakers were pretty dominant during that decade. They did retool here and there. You know, they were able to get Fat Lever and some other pieces for Kiki Vandeweghe, trying to add some defensive chops to the team to better help them in the playoffs. And the kind of the last season in which they were really strong was the 88 season, where they won 54 games, but they lost to the Mavericks in the second round there. And then, you know, we're still okay for a couple of years, but that was kind of the end of the line of them, you know, being a team that anyone could think of as, you know, even be a borderline contender.
Yeah. A fun team, you know, ultimately a solid team, but you know, it was a weak West at that time. And, you know, even then they were still having trouble getting, you know, past the semifinals or past the first round, you know, like you said, only go to the Western Conference Finals one time in 85 and pretty quickly get dispatched, by the Lakers, but a lot of fun and just a really, really memorable team. And it's a team that I like, you know, going back and watching their games too, and watching their style play. It's just, it's ahead of its time in a lot of ways. And, you know, it's not the most efficient basketball, but it's cool. It's, you know, it's not the modern game in all the ways, but it resembles some of that in the sense of, you know, get the ball, bring it up court as quick as possible, get a shot, you know, and they weren't afraid to shoot from all parts of the court. And they weren't afraid to have everybody shoot on the team. Like you said, from 1 to 5, it was like, no, everybody score, everybody do, except for, you know, if T.R. Dunn's on the court, while yeah, he, no, you know, don't T.R. Dunn's on your shoot. Stand
yeah,
over there.
Right. Yeah.
Just stand by defense. We don't really need you now. We're going to need you in a minute because we're not going to. So it didn't ultimately lead to, you know, a ton of success, but it did, you know, it did keep them relevant for pretty much the entire decade, which is more than we could say, unfortunately, about the 90s, which was not great for the Denver Nuggets. Doug Moe left after the 1990 season. Paul Westhead took over, and he was like, hey, we're running? Cool, I'm in. And they retained all of Moe's high-powered offense mentality, but unfortunately got even more ridiculous on the defensive end, where they just didn't even try, like, at all. Like, it was like, I guess, I don't know, maybe a rule that you shouldn't. I don't know what they did, because these guys didn't play a lick of defense at all, even remotely, and they were very bad. They went 20-62, then 24-58 in Westhead's 2 seasons at the helm, which was not good at all. So desperate to turn things around, Denver went to former player Dan Issel and said, please get this thing back on track. He became their head coach in 1993, helped them win 36 games. Sorry, 36 games. That'd be incredible if he made them win 63 games, but no. 36 games. They still missed the playoffs there. More employee, though, around this time is that Denver got their new star, former Georgetown standout, Dikembe Mutombo. He was drafted in 1991. Immediately assumed the role as Nuggets, you know, man in the middle. And over the next few years, they you know, got guys around him as well. Lafonso Ellis, Brian Stith, you know, just okay dudes, like guys maybe that aren't, you know, well-known today, but were solid enough players at the time and certainly fit the style of play that the NBA wanted. And was, you know, gravitating towards. This was definitely not your Doug Moe Nuggets at this point, with Lafonso Ellis and Dikembe Mutombo and Bryant Stith. They were much slower, much more defensive oriented, and it kind of worked, though. They made playoffs in back-to-back seasons in 1994 and 1995. 1994 obviously being the iconic first round series upset over the Seattle Supersonics, which a little bit of a revenge game for stealing, or revenge series I should say, for stealing Spencer Haywood. What do you think about that? I don't know if that was a storyline at the time, but I don't know. I mean, stole Spencer Haywood. Hey, well, we're going to ruin your chances to make the NBA Finals.
We are going to upset you deeply and make you very sad for that. Yes, was quite the shock, of course. Of course, future Denver Nugget coach George Karl was the victim of that. I was doing a research project going back to the 80s Nuggets to see how many threes they generally shot. And the answer is not like a whole lot. I mean, even for the time, a couple seasons they did get as high as fifth in the league in 3-point attempts. So there were years where they were shooting, you know, a bit more than, you know, on the higher end, but usually they were toward the middle or toward the second half of the team. So getting a clue. And yeah, even the Doug Moe, led Nuggets, excuse me, Pacers. I don't know where the hell I got Pacers. We're not talking about the Indiana Pacers. They made the finals in 2000. We don't need to talk about them. So anyway, going back to, yes, that was quite, of course, you know, that upset, quite the crazy thing. And what people, you know, don't remember a lot, and I'd forgotten this too, is that actually in the second round of that series, Denver almost beat the Jazz too. They took the Utah to 7 games in the second round that year, you know, came very close to having another. They were almost the Miami Heat of the 93 season.
Right. Yeah. We'd say Heat who? We already know an 8 seed that made a huge run in the playoffs. Yeah. I always forget about that. And they lost game 7 by like 10 points or whatever, but still the fact that they were even in it, and also a parallel to this year's, you know, playoffs, they were down 3-0 as well.
Right.
They win game 4 by 1 point. They win game 5 by 8 points. Then they win game 6 by 3 points. It's probably like, oh my God, what the hell is going to happen here? Thankfully for the Jazz, they were able to turn it around. And I guess similar to the Heat Celtics series this year, they did kind of put it away pretty easily in game 7 and maybe didn't make it seem as stressful as it was. But yeah, I mean, that losing game 4 by 1 and thinking, all right, well, yeah, we'll let him win 1, but we'll get this thing back. And then, you know, losing, you know, pretty convincingly in game 5 had to definitely scare them. And yeah, it would have been quite the thing, you know, to have the Denver Nuggets, you know, making it to the Western Conference Finals as an 8 seed, you know, with you know, not the most talented roster in the world either, but just a really, really good, well-rounded team with Dikembe Mutombo at the helm. But,
sure.
Yeah, that's unfortunately, well, it's going to probably be about the best of this. And Jason, we have to talk about the 90s, then the Nuggets, and we unfortunately have to talk about Rainbow to Brown. So I'll let you take it away.
Oh, yeah. Why? Terrible decision and sort of at odds with what the NBA trends were at the time, because they went from having unique, colorful uniforms with, you know, a ornate, I don't know if ornate's the right word, but a fancy design, you know, big, bold colors, you know, mountain, rainbow mountain type design, to a very boring navy, gold, wine, and brown color that just I've always thought looked awful. And it is sort of strange that they did that. And again, they kind of went completely, they you know, went the completely the opposite of what the league was going on. I mean, maybe they just couldn't, maybe there was too much color going on. Maybe they had to get bland. But yeah, it, and yeah, it didn't help that the team was, that was definitely their most horrific period in time. You know, after, you know, they were 42-40 in 94 when they made the conference semis. The next season they started 41-41. They actually Issel left and Bertie Bickerstaff ended up taking over and being the coach for the team. And yeah, then it would really go down from there, basically, to the worst season was the 98 season when they went 11-71 and just were absolutely horrific. It came very close to breaking the 76ers record for fewest wins, but they did they sort of rallied a bit toward the end of the year and got to the point where they got to 11 wins. So eventually they lost to Kemba Mutombo. He went to the Hawks in free agency in 96. They were able to get Antonio McDyess and then had a weird situation where they lost McDyess, but then got him the Suns, but then got him back. But then McDyess, you know, got hurt and was never really the promise. They brought Dan Issel back as coach a second time. That didn't really work out. It was just they had Mike D'Antoni there for the lockout season. There, you're never going to hear from that guy again, I'm sure.
No, so, God, no. Yeah, 14-36. Now hit the bricks, pal. And he was an executive with this team too, as they were doing terrible. Yeah, you're done. Yeah, man. You're done. Go back to Europe, pal.
Right.
Got no place for you in the NBA here. It got real bad. It got real bad. And that 11-71 season, they did tie the NBA's worst single season losing streak. 23 games in a row. That is, oh boy, that's a lot, isn't that? Like, that's just 23 games in a row is just not good. And
save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP lawn and garden and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big money
at Menards. And, you know, at the same time as they struggled on the court, off the court, absolutely a mess as well. Ownership had changed a bunch of times. We were keeping you a track of all the ownership changes for the Nuggets for a while. We stopped and we'll pick it back up now, because Comsat is the team, it's the company. Comsat. It's just sounds, it's the perfect, like, late 80s Reagan era, like, you know, conglomerate Comsat. Like, I don't know, who knows what Comsat did, but I'm sure they own, like, Nabisco and a television network or something like that.
And weapons. They sold weapons to the Congress.
They sold military grade helicopters and they owned, you know, Kellogg cereal. What the hell is going on? But Comsat, who owned them, as well as the former Quebec Nordiques, you know, obviously soon to be the Colorado Avalanche, were having financial issues. So in 1997, Comsat sold Ascent Entertainment Group, their shell company for all their sports teams, to Liberty Media. Now, I don't know why this happened, because then Liberty Media was like, well, we don't want the teams. We just bought the Atlanta Braves. And it's like, well, I don't know why you made this transaction then.
Yeah.
But okay. Probably some money moving, money washing. I have no idea. Bigger stuff. I don't get paid this much money to figure out what the hell was going on between Comsat and Liberty Media.
Sure.
But finally, in 1999, after years of back and forth, the Avalanche and the Nuggets are sold to Walmart heirs Bill and Nancy Laurie for $400 million. But wait, not so fast, my friends. Shareholders of Ascent Entertainment Group said that price is too low. They need to be paid for more. So Denver banking tycoon Donald Sturm swooped in and said, aha, I'll buy them for $461 million. Or did he?
No.
Because the city of Denver then said that they would not transfer the parcel of land on which the Pepsi Center, which is now the Ball Center, would stand unless Sturm promised to keep them in Denver for at least another 25 years. Negotiations eventually fell apart. He wasn't planning on moving the team, but he thought the wording of it was kind of weird, and he didn't know what would happen if he died or whatever. So negotiations fall apart. Liberty once again buys them, this time for real. But it was a very weird period where all basketball decisions had to be approved by the team owners as well, which are these just giant conglomerates, which is probably a bad way to operate a basketball team, by having to run up like, hey, can we sign Nick Van Exel? You have to like run it up the ladder to some guy who like couldn't possibly care less, but has to care because they need to meddle in every single thing. So, good Lord. Finally, mercifully, in July of 2000, the Avalanche, the Nuggets, and the Pepsi Center and the land it was on and all that stuff is bought by real estate mogul Stan Kroenke. He still owns the team to this day, sort of. When he bought the St. Louis Rams, he had a controlled movement to the team over to his son, Josh Kroenke, but effectively the Kroenke family still owns the Denver Nuggets as of today. So that has actually lasted for about 23 years so far. So that's, you know, solid ownership, at least for now, for the Denver Nuggets, when they didn't have it ever, pretty much in their entire history.
I feel like we just went through an episode of Succession.
I know, what the hell is going
on? Right.
ComSat. I need to learn more about ComSat and figure out what they were what they were doing. I know they're got to be out of business at this point. There's no way that they're still.
Or they have like they have some sort of like you know,
they were forced to break up.
They have some sort of like benign name that's like like Liberty Consolidated Group.
Yeah, like Forward Progress Inc. or whatever.
Yeah, it's there like, you go. You know. I like that. Forward Progress Inc. Speaking of Forward Progress, things turned around for the Denver Nuggets. 2003, it was a good year to be bad, because that summer's draft was headlined by LeBron James, one of the best of all time. You got Chris Bosh, you got Dwayne Wade, you got Darko Milicic. All those guys, I'm sure, are going to go to wonderful careers. And the Nuggets, and they didn't get the number one spot, but they ended up getting number three. They ended up picking Syracuse star Carmelo Anthony, you know, charismatic guy, huge college star, just came off of a dramatic championship run as a freshman. You know, really the first true, like, big charismatic star of the franchise. It really has is David Thompson. I mean, I know that that Mutombo and at some level certainly was, you know, tied to the city and a big deal. And obviously they had guys like Alex English and Dan Issa who were really good players. And, you know, Alex English probably had some cachet as a great scorer. But, yeah, really in terms of, like, people actually outside of Denver paying to the team, Anthony was, like, their first, you know, really guy that was going to really happen with.
Yeah. Oh, no, for sure. Yeah. It's also like at that time, if you didn't remember what Carmelo was like at this time, like obviously now we've just a few, you know, just a week or so ago, he announced his retirement, and it's like, you know, he's kind of there's a weird like, yeah, great score, but, you know, ultimately, you know, never like, you know, a top tippy top guy or whatever. But at this time right now, like, he's coming off of like one of the best college basketball seasons of all time. Like, just people were wondering, like, this guy's going to be, like, the best scorer in the NBA. Like, he scores incredibly well. The Nuggets need somebody to kind of revitalize them, because it's been so long since they've been good. And yeah, it felt like a jolt. And he felt very NBA ready as well. Even more ready. I think more people probably thought that he was NBA ready than LeBron was. At that time, obviously, LeBron coming from high school, oh, well, the competition from high school to get to the NBA. LeBron pretty quickly showed everybody, okay, no, I'm fine. Like, I can handle this. I'm good. But at the time, everybody was thinking, well, yeah, LeBron's like the long-term project. If you could build him up, you got something. But Carmelo, you can add him to any team tomorrow, and that team's going to get better. And that was exactly what happened. They went from 17 wins to 43 in his first year and make the playoffs for the first time since 1995. So, like you're saying, that's an influence that Thompson and Dikembe didn't have. That's an influence that, like, you know, Spencer Haywood had, where it's just like immediately takes that team from the doldrums into being a contender. So no, it was a thing. Like, if you weren't around at that time, Melo was a thing, and he was a huge, huge deal in Denver. Felt like their first real marketable star as well, because he was marketable as hell to all people. I mean, to kids, to adults, to people in Denver, to people all across the world as well. I mean, the marketing dynamo that was Melo shouldn't be underrated either.
Yeah, I think people were thought of him as like having the career that like Kevin Durant ended up having. Like, yeah. I think that's the level of player that people thought he was going to be. And he wasn't quite that. I mean, he was excellent. He's a Hall of Famer. You know, he's a terrific guy. And he was the best player on some very good teams, but obviously didn't quite reach that level, but still was, you know, like I said, awesome player, awesome star. And as you said, yeah, with, you know, they had Nene, they had Marcus Camby, they acquired Andre Miller, Earl Boykins. So they, you know, they got some solid guys just around there, improved quite a bit, made the playoffs for the first time since 95. Later on, they would get Kenyon Martin, who was like, you know, the big free agent of that year. They won 49 games in 2005. That season actually started pretty poorly, but they turned around once they gave the coaching reins to George Karl, who ended up finishing 32-8 as coach that year. And but the things were, you know, they would go well in the regular season and then kind of fall off in in the playoffs. They would lose in the first round. In fact, I'm going to spoil alert here, but George Karl, he was the coach of the Nuggets for 9 seasons, and they would lose 8 times in the first round in the 9 seasons he was coach. So yeah. 1 year they made the Western Conference final, but. You know, obviously, they were, you know, they again had become a good franchise. They had a bright star. They couldn't compete with the league's elite, at least not for their first season. So beginning of 2007, they take a huge swing. They get Allen Iverson for Andre Miller, Joe Smith, and 2 first round picks. And, you know, it looked pretty good on the court. Like they definitely, you know, improved a bit. 2008, they finished with, you know, 50-32. It's their first 50 win season since 88. But still in the playoffs, it doesn't quite work. And then you start to notice that Iverson, not quite the same player that he had always been. And then they end up switching on that pretty quickly. They make a trade for they trade Iverson and are able to acquire Chauncey Billups from the Boston Celtics. Now, Billups already had a brief stint as a Nugget, had been a University of Colorado star, so he was a big guy coming home. And that was the year where things finally clicked, a 2009 season, and the Nuggets come as close as they had ever come to the finals. They lose in the conference finals to the LA Lakers, but that's definitely the peak of the Carmelo and George Karl era.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think you said Boston Celtics for Chauncey Billups, right? Obviously the Detroit Pistons, in case anybody says he was on the Pistons or whatever.
Oh, yes.
I thought I heard Celtics, but Billups was everywhere for a while. But yeah, he was a Piston at that time.
Yeah,
but,
yes, you're right. Yes,
but this was felt like it was the peak, and it felt like okay, and that was a really good team that year. That was a team that really legitimately felt like okay. You know, you tried the thing with Iverson, and it was pretty obvious to most people that Iverson and Melo was probably a bad mix, and it was okay, but it wasn't. But then you had Billups, a guy who's selfless as hell, winning pedigree, can pass defense. The ball, play great defense, make up for all the anything that Carmelo doesn't have, Billups had. You know, maybe people question Carmelo's leadership. Great, you got Chauncey Billups there. Maybe Carmelo's not a great defensive player. Great, you got Chauncey Billups there. You know what I mean? It just all made perfect sense, and it worked. It worked really well. They were 54-28. They ended up with the 2 seed. They go to the Western Conference Finals. They ultimately lose the series 4-2 to the Los Angeles Lakers, like you said, but they finally felt like they maybe had something figured out. Like, okay, this is kind of the first run with these guys, but come back next year, things are going to happen. I mean, this is a team that's built for the next few years, and they were in the regular season. Like you said, they won 50-plus games again, 3 straight years, but fall in the first round to the Utah Jazz, their 6th first-round elimination in 7 years. And then things just kind of sputter and they don't get any better. And it's just like every year it's like, all right, here we go again. And little by little, the enthusiasm is starting to get lost of the Melo era in Denver. Hey, when's this guy going to ever, you know, get out of the first round? When is he ever going to, you know, get back here? When are we ever going to, you know, win a title? And, you know, at the same time, you got a lot of stuff going on around the league with several people that were in that draft class as well. Dwayne Wade has already won a title. LeBron James is ascending to be a top tippy top star. And Melo just kind of feels like he's, you know, he's still a great scorer. He's still, you know, a very supremely talented player. But it just feels like he's missing that special thing or that it factor to get them over the hump. And people are also kind of wondering is how's Carmelo feeling about being in Denver and them losing in the first round year after year after year after year. And well, on February 22nd, 2011, we figured it out. Melo said that, you know, speculation that he wanted to leave the Nuggets for a long time, that he wasn't going to re-sign, that he was, you know, eventually looking to, you know, plan an exit from the team. He is traded along with Chauncey Billups, Anthony Carter, Sheldon Williams, and Ronaldo Balkman to the New York Knicks in a multi-player deal, also involving the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Nuggets are going to receive Wilson Chandler, Raymond Felton, Danilo Gallinari, Timothy Mozgov, and Kosta Kufis. So they are going to just say, hey, here's, give us a bunch of talented players, we'll figure it out. And they did. They miraculously, they win their first game without Melo, even though they only had nine guys suited up. And they didn't completely crater, which actually caused a lot of weird, you know, discussions about Carmelo Anthony at the time of like, it's weird. This team is doing better without Carmelo. And I know George Karl and the Furious George book would talk a lot about this team or whatever, but they played very well. I mean, no matter what you say about Carmelo, whatever, they played well. They played well under Karl. They were a well-balanced team. Everybody was all kind of playing their role. Nobody was really the tippy-top star. They won 50 games again, but they still, regardless of that, yes, they did better without Carmelo. They still lost in the first round, this time to the upstart Oklahoma City Thunder, which had to feel like a bit of a gut punch too, as this team's kind of ascending, as you guys are kind of just, you know, floating around or maybe falling again. They did some retooling the next season. They added Andre Iguodala. Again, they lost in the first round. And this is now, you know, when the George Karl thing is going to come to an end. Yes, we're winning 50 games. We're playing well. We got a well-balanced team, but we just can't get out of the first round. As you said, 8 first-round losses in 9 seasons. Once they lose Karl, the thing kind of unravel a little bit. I mean, it's 2 completely mundane seasons. They aren't really worth wasting our time, to be honest. The thing you do have to know, that, you know, in 2014, they do a pretty good pick with the 41st overall pick. During a Taco Bell commercial, famously, they traded for a pudgy NBA player from Serbia called Nikola Jokic. So initially, you know, there was, you know, they drafted him via a trade, and all this sort of thing. But regardless, it didn't matter. They got Nikola Jokic, drafted him during a Taco Bell commercial, 41st overall pick in the NBA draft. They also acquire Yusef Nurkic and Gary Harris in that draft as well. So just a really, really good haul for them. Those guys, I mean, Nurkic would, you know, there'd be a long time where there was a decision of, oh, are we going to have Nurkic or Jokic? Who's going to lead us? And they made the right decision, I would say, Jason, by trading Nurkic and keeping Jokic. But Gary Harris, a big part of the Nuggets revival as well. And I would say, I was looking at that second round of that 2014 draft. There's a lot of super talented players there. So you have the 38th overall pick. Listen to this run here. The 38th overall pick is Spencer Dinwiddie, who obviously a really, really good player. I mean, still playing in the league today. Jeremy Grant is picked with the 39th pick. Obviously ended up having a pretty damn good career. Glenn Robinson III, not as good as those other two guys, but did end up carving out a pretty good, you know, for a 40th overall pick. Not bad. The 41st overall pick, well, he's a two-time MVP, so I'd say that's probably pretty good value from your 41st overall pick. 45th, Dwight Powell, who, you know, still on the Dallas Mavericks, a pretty good pick there. 46th is Jordan Clarkson. Again, having a really, really good career right now. So, yeah, that's a lot of value from your, you know, the 30s to the 40s in a draft that you look at the top 12, and it's like, you know, not a lot of good, you know. You have Andrew Wiggins as the number one overall pick. You know, he's good, great career, but, you know, maybe not number one overall pick. Jabari Parker was second overall. I mean, there teams were tanking. Yeah. If you weren't around for this period, teams were tanking for like 2 years to get one of Wiggins or Parker. Like, everybody knew that those are going to be the two guys, and people were like planning their tank to get one of those two guys. Ended up being, you know, neither of them ended up having, like, you know, great NBA careers. Number 3rd overall pick, obviously Joel Embiid. That's going to work out. He just won the MVP. That's not bad. Aaron Gordon, the number 4 overall pick that year, ended up, you know, obviously making it to Denver right now. Dante Exum, number 5 overall.
Injuries, there, right?
Yeah, didn't quite work out. You know, some okay talent here. Number 6, Marcus Smart. Number 7, Julius Randle. Number 8, Sacramento Kings, Nick Stauskas.
Yeah,
not great there. Number 9, Noah Vonleh. Not great there. Number 10, Elfrid Payton. Number 11, Doug McDermott. And then number 12, Dario Saric.
Saric, not bad. I want to jump back a little bit just to the note one thing. So George Karl's last year with the Nuggets, it was 2013 season. That was the year they brought Andre Iguodala in, as you mentioned, and they had Ty Lawson, who was 25. They had Danilo Gallinari, who was 24. Kenneth Faried, who's 23. Wilson Chandler, 25. Kostakouvas, 23. Evan Fournier was 20. JaVale McGee, they just had a whole lot of guys. Anthony Randolph on that team.
Yeah, that team rocked.
That team they had a lot of guys. They had a lot of guys on that team.
That was my NBA 2K team whenever I'd play people like online or play my friends. Because like you could go like 13 deep. So you could just like do rotations. Yeah. They were everybody was healthy. Everybody was good. It was all, yeah. I love that team.
Yeah, and I think people thought like Lawson and Gallinari could be like all-star level players. You know, like Lawson kind of fell off, I think, for not basketball related reasons. And Gallinari had a good career, but was never quite the player that, you know, he kind of seemed like he could be. But like, you know, that playoff series was, you know, that was the 3-6 where Denver won 57 games. They were the 3 and Golden State was the 6 seed that year. And I think that was the first year where Golden State had made the playoffs along with Steph and Clay and everybody. And that was very much a like two teams, potential teams, the future idea behind it. And it, you know, of course, Golden State won and then Iguodala ended up leaving the Nuggets and going to the Warriors famously. But I do really, that was kind of like a watershed NBA history moment because it was definitely not impossible for Denver to win that series, you know? And I mean, I don't think like, things change dramatically if that happens. I'm sure the Warriors are great the next year. And the Nuggets, you know, obviously the guys they had, you know, were, you know, they were kind of a regular season team. But still, it's sort of interesting to look back at that 10 years ago now and, you know, what I thought at the time when I think that kind of a consensus like, oh, these are two potential teams of the future type things.
Yeah, no, it definitely felt like they were, you know, two ships passing at the night or whatever. And right. then, like, right. the Warriors just, you know, bombarded them with cannonballs and basically sunk that team. Right. And then obviously went on to have everything else that happened afterwards, where it really felt like the Nuggets were just, like, really close. And they were kind of like the bastion of, like, hey, this is, like, team basketball in the modern era. You know, this is – and they were kind of playing a style that the Warriors would use as well, where it was like, hey, we're going to pass the ball around a lot. Like, all five guys on this team can all contribute on the offensive end. And you know, defensively, they weren't that bad. They weren't that great. But, like, it sort of – the Warriors seemed to take a little bit from what the Nuggets had been developing over the last couple of years, but did it with, you know, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, two of the best, you know, shooters of all time, and Draymond Green, an absolute, you know, freak in terms of what he could do on the court. And they did it a lot better than the Nuggets did it. And yeah, that did feel like a watershed moment in both those teams where it was like, oh, wait, hold on. This is the team now. Like this Warriors team, that's the up and coming team. And like you said, Iguodala jumping over to them as well really felt, again, like another gut punch too, where it was like, yeah, he's going to who the new guys are. And he picked right. Because obviously the Warriors would do pretty well afterwards.
That's pretty good, yeah. All right, so as you mentioned, 2015, the Nikola Jokic era, well, begins. It slowly begins. It takes a while for things to pick up. But, yeah, they get Michael Malone as their new head coach. Next year they get Jamal Murray. They trade Yusuf Nurkic in 2017, which basically opens up things for Jokic to be their main guy. After falling out of the playoff picture for a short time, they're right back on the cusp finishing ninth in the conference in 2019. So, the last five seasons have made the playoffs of each year. In 2020, they lost the Western Conference Finals, of course, to the Lakers. That was the bubble season. That was their best chance at a championship up until this season, making the finals. But yeah, you know, obviously Jokic being the key star of this era, he had been pretty special. Five times All NBA, three times on the first team, two MVPs, one runner up. Career 20.2 points per game, 10.5 rebounds per game, 6.6 assists per game. His 6.6 assists per game, the most for any center for their career. Will Chamberlain at 4.4, Bill Russell at 4.3. Yeah,
that's absurd. I know we had another show where we talked about that, but like he is just blowing the other guys away in terms of like if he keeps this up, which I don't see any reason why he can't keep that up. I mean, obviously,
might dip a little bit, but yeah.
I don't think all one at any point he's not going to be able to pass the ball, you know, in terms of getting assists. Right. It might be, you know, as his scoring goes down, it might be harder for him to find open guys as people aren't, you know, double teaming him or coming to him. But like right now he's got such a healthy lead in that almost certainly he will end his career as like the top assist center of all time. And he's really pretty much already there, you know?
Yeah. And his, you know, just for some context, so Bill Walton considered one of the best passing centers of all time.
Yeah.
He had a 17.1 assist percentage, which is tied for eighth all time among centers. Jokic is double that at 35.5%.
Yeah, it's absurd.
Yeah, I mean, it's like all the great guards and then Jokic, you know, in terms of assists percentage. And yeah, no one really talked about this, but he actually became within 0.2 assists of averaging a triple-double this season. 24.5 points per game, 11.8 rebounds per game, 9.8 assists. He came extremely close to averaging a triple-double. And I don't recall hearing anybody talking about it.
No, I don't either. Until you put that note in there, I was like, really? And then I looked. I was like, yeah, damn, he was there. I wonder if we have triple double fatigue. You know,
probably.
I think we're all like, all right, we gave a little too much to triple doubles for a while there during the Westbrook era. Maybe we need to cool it down. But that, I mean, that's when you're having this kind of triple double, like these aren't like, you know, no offense to Russell Westbrook triple doubles, but like, good Lord, these numbers that Jokic is averaging, like you said, it's just an absurd, you know, stat line. He doesn't obviously get the triple double, but 24.5 points and 11.8 rebounds, and then, you know, if he got to 10 assists, I mean, that's insane. That's nuts.
Yeah,
and he had a triple double last year. He did average a triple double last year. He had two more rebounds per game last year as well, 11 assists per game. I mean, last year was just absurd.
No, I think you're misreading, Richie. He had 13.8 total rebounds, 7.9 assists. He had 11.
Oh, that's sorry. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, up the assist, reduce the rebounds a little bit there. So, this is a pretty wild year for him to have. Yep. It's pretty crazy. But like you're saying, I didn't see enough people really talk about that. And it might be Westbrook fatigue.
Yeah. The standards of triple doubles, just because of Westbrook, what it did, it's not as novel as it used to be in terms of triple doubles. But yeah, Jokic combined regular season and playoff, he is fifth all time in triple doubles. He just passed Jason Kidd. He's 119 as of this recording before the finals. So, you know, never know, might get a few more. But yeah, 210 is the record for Westbrook. It'll be interesting to see if Jokic comes anywhere near catching that one. He's obviously, you know, he's 27 at this point. He's not old, but you never know what's going to happen for the rest of his career if he continues on the rate of triple doubles. But yeah, you know, the just one of the most, this is obviously in terms of the greatest players in Nuggets history. I don't think there's any question at this point that is Jokic. You know, they've had some great players, you know, retired numbers for Alex English, you know, who's the greatest scorer of the 80s, at least most points in the 80s, you know, Fat Lever, David Thompson, you know, definitely before his time and, you know, injuries and drugs, you know, kept from what would have been, you know, probably would have been in contention for greatest Nugget had not been for all of that in terms of him.
Yeah, you can see his career. You go look at his career numbers and you can tell when, like, you know, both of those things really just reared their ugly head. And it's like, man, this guy was on the track to being like an all-time great and still has great numbers. But yeah, ultimately you look at the stat line, you're just like, man, what could have been with him for sure.
Yeah, Byron Beck, of course, you know, original Nugget, you know, played the first 10, 11 years with the franchise. You know, you got Dan Issel, of course, you know, one of the other great players of all time, Dikembe Mutombo, you know, Carmelo Anthony. Obviously, they've had some greats there, but I think, yeah, Jokic, without question, takes the cake.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah. He's ascended in a completely different way than most other guys in that franchise's history, and yeah, if he makes it, if he gets him to a title, then yeah, it's a different a totally different conversation. But he's definitely, he's got to be the best Nugget of all time at this point. I think without really any true competition. I mean, all those other guys are really, really good and all, you know, play their parts, but two-time MVP leading them to the finals. It's mounting up for Jokic now. And yeah, even if he left in like a year or two or whatever, which seems unfathomable at this time, like, yeah, it just, you know,
yeah,
doesn't seem like, yeah, he's probably already cemented himself there for sure. So there you go. That's the Denver Nuggets. Anything else on the Nuggets? Oh, I did want to do an update. ComSat. You want to know about ComSat?
We did
a great job of they were a global telecommunications company based on the United States. They had satellites and they were provided them to the U.S. Navy. Exactly like you said, in 1998, they merged with Lockheed Martin. They said, hey, for our genocide machines, can we borrow some of your satellites? And they said, sure.
Why not?
Yes, you can. Sense. And somewhere along the line there, they also owned professional basketball teams and the Avalanche. Because, of course, you have to diversify, Jason. It's the 80s. You got to diversify your portfolio. You got to own some sports teams. So.
Right. You got to own some sports teams. You got to own some food companies. You got to,
We nailed it. We nailed it. Local TV pretty much station. What they were. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Own a regional sports network. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fun. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, this was enjoyable. Hopefully people got to know a little bit more about the Nuggets. You know, they're a team. It's interesting. So now, Rich, do you know which teams have not made the NBA Finals now that the Nuggets have?
I believe
there are five.
Okay. Do you have a pretty good idea in your head?
I do, yes.
Okay, so definitely the Minnesota Timberwolves. I know that.
Right.
Isn't it both the Hornets and the Pelicans? Like all the Charlotte and New Orleans, throw them all in together, right?
Correct. Yes.
Both of them. Okay.
Yeah.
The Grizzlies haven't because they're still pretty new here.
Yep.
I guess they're not that new. They've been around for a lot of time.
They're
not that new. They probably should have made the finals at some point.
Yeah,
28 years. Hey, you know, I still feel young and I'm 35, so you know, that's fine.
Sure. Right.
Oh, man.
They're known for their historical ineptitude.
They're the Clippers. Of course, Clippers. Yeah, the freaking Clippers. Come on.
Yes. So those are the five teams. Now, the Hawks and the Kings have not made the finals in their current cities. You know, so the Hawks last made the finals in 62, I believe, with the, of course, when they were in St. Louis and the
Rochester the Kings. Royals. Right.
Yeah. I think 51 would have been the last year. They won the championship in Rochester. So, yeah. So, got a chart. Got another one on there. So we'll see who makes it next out of those franchises.
I would have said if you asked me before last season, I would say the Grizzlies, but I'm not so sure about that one anymore.
Not so sure about that one anymore. Pelicans, if they can hold Zion.
None of the above, honestly. If I was a betting, if gun to my head, you said pick one, I'd probably just say, maybe just shoot me. I don't know. The Pelicans, I guess. Yeah.
There we go.
Zion just is healthy 1 year and great, and maybe they do it. Clippers don't feel like they have momentum right now. The Timberwolves, dear God, no. And then the Hornets. Yuck. No way.
Doesn't seem great. So, all right. Well, Rich, it's been a fun one.
Yeah.
Hopefully everyone enjoyed it. You know, check out the Step Back at Fansided, where our shows are podcasts, where there's some great NBA content. Of course, with the finals coming up, all you want to know is there. And you can find us at overandbacknba.com. We are on social media at Facebook and Twitter at overandbacknba. I guess we're on Instagram as well. You can listen to us wherever podcasts are played. Just leave us a rating and a review if you can to help people. It helps people. I guess the more we do that, the more attention we get, and the more self-esteem we get, which is, you know, of course, the most important thing.
All right, more people that join the community, join the conversation, have fun doing this sort of thing. So the more the merrier, for sure.
Well, the more the merrier, indeed. So, all right. Well, thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back again soon.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.